The Spirit of Antichrist. Chapter 8. Churches enrolled under the banner of spiritualism. Some may think we have made a wildly extravagant statement in saying that the time is not far distant when the majority of professed Christians will be enrolled under the banner of spiritualism, but we shall present ample proof to show that the so-called Orthodox churches are even now ripe for spiritualism, and wait only till it shall have put on a little more of the attire of heaven in order to accept it. In proof of this assertion, I shall quote only from those who are authorized to speak for the churches. First, let it be remembered that with almost all the religious denominations of the world, the doctrine of the natural immortality of the soul is a cardinal point of faith, and we have shown that this doctrine is the cornerstone of spiritualism, and that a belief in it logically tends to all the vagaries and abominations of heathen spiritualism. A writer in the world's advanced thought, speaking of the phenomena of spiritualism, says, "I can understand why materialists are unable to believe the possibility of such startling proofs of immortality, but why they should be called in question by Christians, when they come to prove the very foundation claim of their faith, and the one of all others which most taxes credulity, I cannot understand." That is, he can readily understand why spiritualism is not accepted by those who do not believe in immortality at all, but he cannot see why those who believe in natural immortality for all men, and that there is no such thing as death, should refuse to accept the testimony which proves it. But we shall see that they are not so skeptical as some think. A writer in New Thought, under the heading, "Who are Spiritualists?" says, "As a matter of fact, spiritualists are found among the advocates of almost every system of religion and all the peoples of the earth. It is received alike by Orthodox and so-called heterodox Christians, by theists and deists, on its own testimony of facts. Thousands who believe in a personal God and the divine inspiration of the Hebrew and Christian scriptures are as really spiritualists as those who deny both. Thousands do not think it necessary to leave their churches in order to consistently advocate the spiritual philosophy. Very many would be more active in the cause were it not for the wholesale denunciations of the churches, and of all Christian spiritualists especially, by some who make themselves offensively conspicuous in our ranks, both as writers and speakers. That this is not the vain boasting of an enemy, who wishes to cast a reproach upon the churches, will be seen by what follows. We begin with the largest body of professed Christians, the Catholics. When Monsignor Capel, the famous agent of the Roman propaganda, and sometime chaplain to Pope Pius IX, was lecturing in California, he had something of a discussion with one G.P. Colby, a spiritualist. Colby set forth the beliefs of spiritualism and charged Capel with misrepresentation. The following is a part of the Chronicle's account, September 7, 1885, of the priest's reply. Monsignor Capel took up Mr. Colby's chief statement seriatim. He at first expressed surprise that the latter had not tried to ascertain what he in the first place had said before replying to it. Much that was attributed to him was the merest parody of his real words. He was a believer in immortality. If he were not, the Catholic Church would not tolerate him within her bosom for a moment. It was brought against the Catholics that they believed themselves in daily communication with the angels and saints. But the angels and saints were spirits. To Catholics, the spirit world was as clear as the light of a gas jet. They walked the streets accompanied by guardian angels. The dead were in their eyes disembodied spirits who surrounded the throne of God. They prayed to them as well as to the saints and angels. To say that they did not hold communication with the spirit world would be contrary to the whole evidence of the history of the Church. Monsignor Capel denied that he had expressed a disbelief in spiritism. He had simply left out of the category of possible supernatural manifestations all biological phenomena. Aside from these, spiritualism was but a misrepresentation of Catholic teaching, and it had been in the world from the beginning. Thus we find that, on the testimony of one of its foremost representatives, the Catholic Church is wholly spiritualist. But we should know that without this testimony, for its prayers for and to the dead, and its host of saints to whom adoration is paid, are sufficient evidence of the fact. In his Life of Pope Leo XIII, Dr. Bernard O'Reilly says of the habit that Catholics have of naming their children after scripture personages and churchmen. It was thought, in the firm and universal belief of the real though invisible communion between the spiritual world of the blessed in heaven and their brethren still struggling on earth, that the bestowing of these dear and honored names on children in baptism secured them special protectors in heaven, and was to them a powerful motive, when grown to manhood and womanhood, to honor by Christian lives the sainted names they bore. And on page 83 he speaks of Stanislaus Kostka as the boy saint whom Catholic Poland reveres as its patron and protector in heaven. There is probably not a reader of these lines who could not from his own knowledge of the Catholic Church add many like evidences. So we have the great Roman Catholic Church as essentially a spiritualist church, and claiming to be such. We turn now to Protestantism. The Sunday Times has undoubtedly as wide a circulation as any religious journal in the land, and possibly larger than any other. It is undenominational, although its leading editor is a Methodist, but it is taken and read by Sunday school teachers and scholars of all denominations, and among its correspondents are the leading divines and educators of both Europe and America. In an editorial in the issue of August 20, 1885, we find the following under the heading, What Our Dead Do For Us. Much of the best work of the world is done through the present, personal influence of the dead. And in our estimate of the forces, which give us efficiency, we ought to assign a large place to the power over us, and in us, of loved ones whom we mourn is wholly removed from us. When death takes away one on whom we have leaned, the temptation to us is to feel that his work for us is done, and that henceforth, while we live on here, we must live on without his presence or aid. Yet, as a practical fact, and as a great spiritual truth, our dead do for us as constantly and as variously as they could do for us if they were still here in flesh, and they do for us very much that they could not do unless they were dead. Some of the saintly faces of fathers and mothers, which are a benediction to all who look at them, could never have shone as now with the reflected light of heaven, unless they had been summoned to frequent upward lookings through the clouds, in loving communion with their children in heaven. There are manly and womanly children, who are more serious and earnest and devoted in their young life struggles, because of their constant sense of the overwatching presence of their dead parents. And so the dead live on here, for, and with, and in, those who mourn and remember them as gone hence forever. Our living friends do much for us, but perhaps our dead friends do yet more. In the bitterness of our keenest grief over the loss of our loved ones, there may be the consoling thought that we do not lose the stimulus and the inspiration of their memories, nor part, even for the time being, with the more sacred influence of their example, and of their spiritual fellowship. The most ardent professed spiritualist could not give utterance to more pronounced spiritualist doctrine than this. The Sunday School Times has an open letter department, in which correspondents may freely ask questions or express their opinions on any subject. It often contains sharp criticism on statements that have appeared in the paper, but no criticism on the sentiments quoted above has ever appeared. On the contrary, we have seen quite a number of commendatory notices of the article. The California Christian Advocate of September 2, 1885, contained a letter from the editor, who was visiting in Oregon. In giving an account of his doings, he said, "We visited the cemetery and enjoyed for a little while communion with the dead. The Advance of Chicago is the Congregationalist Journal of the West and is one of the leading church papers in the country." In the issue of July 9, 1885, the editor said, "God's people never work alone. No child of his is ever left unaided. A great company which no man can number is sent forth to minister unto those who shall be heirs of salvation. Just what they do, or how they help, we may not know, but that they do help and interpose to protect and guide us, we surely believe." After referring to Hebrew 1:14, which teaches that the angels are all ministering spirits sent forth to minister for those who shall be heirs of salvation, the editor continues, "But are our departed friends among the number of those engaged in this ministry? Do those who have once lived in the flesh, and on this earth, form a part of this great host?" A fair inference from the scriptures will, it seems to us, give an affirmative answer to this question. We do not say that this is an authorized doctrine, but such inference is a fair one. No one has authority, either from nature or revelation, for the assertion that when the good die they cease to have any interest in the affairs of this world. The assumption that they never return to this earth is wholly unwarranted. Indeed, no one can be sure that they ever leave its busy scenes. They may simply pass beyond the range of our few senses. That undiscovered country from whose bourne no traveler returns is good Shakespeare, but it is not good scripture. And the above extract from a Congregationalist journal is good spiritualism. If it is not out-and-out spiritualism, then there is no such thing. But we have more. The New York Observer is a staunch Presbyterian journal, one of the oldest and most influential in the United States. The following spiritualist verses appeared in its issue of July 22, 1886. How cheering the thought that spirits in bliss do bow their bright wings to a world such as this. They leave the sweet joys of the mansions above, to breathe o'er our bosoms the message of love. They come when that pilgrim has rested from woe, to gild the dark couch of the mourner below. They smile on the weeper, and brightly appears the rainbow of hope through the mists of his tears. Oh, blessings upon them wherever they fly, to brighten the earth or illumine the sky. Heaven grant us, when parted from life and its cares, a pinion of light and a mission like theirs. No more direct spiritualist doctrine was ever taught in any spiritualist paper. Yet there are few professed Christian believers in the natural immortality of man who would not call it orthodox. Then how far is the Christian world today from spiritualism? Who can tell?